This is Roni's Own Radio. Now, Roni's Own Radio is a show where we present views and interviews about everything from God to Star Wars and everything in between, in about 30 minutes. We hope to enlighten, enrage, and engage you by looking at topics from many different angles. You never know what you're going to get with Roni's Own Radio, but it will always be a very, very different podcast. Roni's Own Radio. Check us out at jrdonline.com. And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roni's Own Radio number 40. And I'm going to tread on dangerous ground tonight, and or whenever you're listening to this. And we will trudge into the question, is Star Wars dead? And there's a lot of layers to it, and I had a chance to get Mr. Bob Crispin on the phone, and we had a lively discussion about the subject. So, buckle up, get ready, and we will look into the question, is Star Wars dead? Thanks, everybody, for joining us again on Roni's Own Radio. I have the extreme pleasure to have Bob Crispin on the phone. Say hey, Bob.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for letting me be on the show.
Excellent. Now, the topic today really has come because there's been a couple of events that I've heard about and I've kind of experienced, and it's a bit of a wake-up call. It's kind of a clarion call to really get to the heart of an issue. Now, as probably many of you are aware, myself and Bob are part of the Star Wars fan audio community. And there is a large convention in North Carolina called Con Carolinas. Now, it is not a huge convention, but there has been a huge showing of Star Wars fan audio personalities in the past. So this last year, it started to wane. As a matter of fact, there was very little participation and interest in it. And I started to think, well, but Star Wars is such a big phenomenon. What's wrong? And also I started to look into getting some fan audio stuff going for, there's a World Sci-Fi Convention in Anaheim coming in August. Mm-hmm. And no one's returning my emails. They're not interested, but they're interested in Star Trek because it's their 40th year. So, right. which brings me to the question today, is Star Wars dead? And so, Bob, I'll pose it to you. Is Star Wars dead?
Well, I am of the convention of saying that Star Wars is not dead. I think we've hit an era where things are in transition, and I think that scares a lot of fans. Mm-hmm. We've been here before. There were the dead years of the late 80s, early 90s, and I think we're kind of back in that trend again. Okay. And I think fans, as well as some of the community, is a little afraid of what the future holds, because as far as George is concerned, George Lucas, mm-hmm. There will not be any more movies.
Right.
And that's tough. That's tough for people to accept, I think. I personally don't accept it, and I don't accept it for a couple of reasons, and that is, well, my big reason is I think that they're really careful to word how the Star Wars universe is going to go, and that is that George isn't going to direct any more movies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It doesn't say that Rick McCollum couldn't direct it or anybody mm-hmm. else couldn't direct any more movies, but I do believe that Star Wars fans are concerned about that. I actually think that we're making a transition, and I think it's kind of like the transition from Star Trek, but in reverse.
Okay.
Star Trek went, you know, mm-hmm. TV show first, then in the movies. I think Star Wars is making the reverse transition now. We've had the movies have been really successful. Now I think we're going to start transitioning it to the TV shows and seeing where they can go with it there.
Great point. Now, I am of the opposite view, is Star Wars as a phenomenon is dead. Now, we'll talk a little bit about the defibrillators and how to revive it toward the end. And I think we probably may have a lot of similar views in that. But my point is, Star Wars as a phenomenon is dead. And the reason it is dead is the corporation structure killed it. The blockbuster state of the film, I think, surprised Lucas and everybody else. and it just mushroomed way out of the stratosphere. They did not know how to handle the type of fandom that was coming. Every place that they try to hold some type of a fan event, they underestimate and they are not prepared. And so as the money started rolling in, the labor of love became a labor of money. And there's a lot of different facets and parts to it. So I think that as we go through, we'll kind of uncover maybe some of the issues that I'm talking about. But Bob, I've asked you to give 3 points of why you feel that Star Wars isn't dead. And so I'd like you to go ahead and present that first one.
And my first point about Star Wars not being dead is the simple fact that it seems to me, and I think it's very true, and I've seen it within my own family even, that Star Wars is transgenerational. Mm-hmm. My father saw Star Wars when he was, you know, probably middle 30s, 40s, somewhere around in that age range, and really kind of fell in love with it. And because he did, my brother and I were completely in Star Wars and got into it a lot. My brother has probably watched it probably less than I have. I've been more into it than my brother had a tendency to be into it. And now we're kind of going on the third generation of Christmans that have been involved in Star Wars, and that my son, who is almost on the obsession side of Star Wars, is falling in love with the movies too. And I think it's interesting that it has not changed. You know, viewpoints haven't changed within my family even across generations. And the fact that, you know, my son loves it, I've loved it, my brother's loved it, my father's loved it, I think it's one of those types of phenomenons where it is cross-generational. And, you know, going back to our Star Trek thing, I loved Star Trek. I was actually a Star Trek geek for a long while. I just professed that recently. but Star Trek had its time, and unfortunately, it didn't become cross-generational. Hmm. It was great for the 60s and 70s, and then the Next Generation came along and carried kind of the 80s, and then we hit the 90s. There was nothing there. There was nothing to keep it going.
Right.
And I disagree that Star Wars, I think, is cross-generational in the fact that you don't need to have new movies to keep it going. I think the concepts in Star Wars are things that have happened in world history, will continue happening in world history, because, let's face it, history kind of repeats itself.
Sure.
And Star Wars has a lot of the facets of things that have happened in history that will probably continue to happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I do agree that there are themes within the story that affect everyone, no matter what age. Overcoming the odds when you're by yourself. How do you overcome a wall in your life? How do you defeat evil in your own life? How do you succeed? I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I think a 12-year-old, a 24-year-old, a 30, a 50-year-old can relate to that. And I would agree that it is transgenerational. And I think me being older, grew up through that time between Return of the Jedi and Episode One, and it was a little tough. What's nice about this point right now that we're living in is we have DVDs now. We have a lot of VHS tapes and different things and books and all that. So I think that helps out. But I think at a base level, I certainly agree with what you're saying, is that it is transgenerational. You can pass it down. You know, probably Star Trek fans are foaming at the mouth right now because they, well, it's the same for, well, anyway, we're not talking about Star Trek right now. So I certainly agree with that. I think my first point to the contrary is that Lucasfilm, the money machine. Now, I don't believe you went to Celebration 3. Is that correct?
No, I've never actually been to a Celebration per se. And honestly, I've talked it over with my wife. Celebration 4 is looking pretty out of it too, because I live in upstate New York, and that would be quite a trip. And unless I find some funds or some way for somebody to help fund me get out there, being on a teacher's salary,
yeah, I understand.
I really can't afford to make it out there. So I've never been to a Celebration. Wanted to go. I've never gone.
Well, Celebration, I don't know if you knew this, is Latin for standing in a line. So there are a lot of lines there and lots of people. And, you know, Sebastian from Star Wars Undirect, my hat goes off to him because he slept out all night long waiting for George Lucas. So, you know, if there's an Uber fan list, he's on that list, and I slept in my nice warm bed. Anyway, so the point is the convention sessions switched from pointing directly to Star Wars and talking about Star Wars items. The last one I went to, which was Celebration 3, talked about a game called Mercenary, a video game where you can blow stuff up. What's that got to do with Star Wars? Nothing. It's a Lucasfilm product. Okay. We also talked about THX 1138, the director's cut DVD that was coming out. What does that have to do with Star Wars? Slim, but really not anything. And that's what, when I started to kind of see the shift, it wasn't just Star Wars, it was Lucasfilm. And Lucasfilm was running that session. And so Steve Sansweet, of course, you know, in Celebration 3, released the title and all this. But I started to really kind of look at that process. I mean, you know, I'm trying to stay calm, but when we talk about re-releasing the Star Wars videos over and over and over again, off the top of my head, there's four videos that were released, you know, that was, this is it, this is it. The first one was just the normal VHS. The second was the THX version. The third was, it was something else. The fourth was the special editions. And I was like, man, that was it. And
yeah,
then
the third would have been the Laserdisc special edition.
Sure. And each one, obviously, you know, another, you know, $40 or $30 or whatever they were. And I mean, sure, there's one thing about, well, we need to kind of upgrade to, you know, a better platform to view it and all this kind of stuff. I understand that, but you have to kind of close an eye and look a little to the left and not see that it's the bottom line. And then just to top it all off, this whole thing about not releasing the older original trilogies that aren't cleaned up. It's just kind of, we take it off the shelf and we release that. That is just sick. I mean, it's almost like, well, we love the fans that are like, you know, 20 and under, but the fans that are older, that stood in line in 1977 over and over and over, well, we don't care about them. And it's kind of sad, but it's all about the money. It's all about the money. It's all about what's going to bring the bottom line. So, I mean, just the fact the other day, ILM is selling off the physical modeling department. And they're going purely digital.
And I just brought this up with Nathan. I commented about it for Nathan on Chrono Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of Star Wars fans have concerns about that in particular. The fact they're starting to sell off divisions.
Sure.
That is kind of a scary thing. Lucas, with his company being as big as it is, if he starts selling divisions off, we could start seeing ILM sold off in pieces,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a scary prospect in that if he does that, which would be great for money marketing for him, but
sure.
For the fans, man, that could just basically, I mean, throw everything off. I mean, I have huge concerns about them selling off the modeling division, because that is ILM. That's what
Fair.
ILM was, the
mm-hmm.
modeling division. Everybody could argue against it, but that's, I mean, Lucas knows it.
Well,
to sell that off is kind of a scary gamble, if you ask me.
Did you watch any of the making of Episode 3, little video clips that they had on StarWars.com?
Yes, I've watched a couple of them.
There was one that specifically said, we still need models. I mean, they were making the case for 25 minutes about, even though digital's here, we still need models. And they were having the models of, you know, the buildings and all this stuff. We need this. It's very important. Well, I guess not really, you know. And
But you know, and I think a lot of this, too, comes back to Lucas himself. Not necessarily the company, but George himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's made a history of this, and Nathan's made a point of this, too, of saying one thing, doing another, talking outside of his mouth,
mm-hmm.
doing another. You know, like, well, we're never going to see the originals again. Well, here we are. We're watching the originals come out in DVD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lucas said that we need models, you know, and now here we are selling off the modeling division, you know. Like the other one, well, I wrote for 3 movies. No, I wrote for 6. No,
mm-hmm.
wait, there's 9. No,
mm-hmm.
now there's 6. No, you know. So I think Lucas doesn't see the, like, distinct future. I think he sees the immediate now. Mm-hmm. Here's what my company needs to do now in order to survive.
Right.
I don't know if he has an ultimate game plan 12 years down the line. Mm. And that's kind of scary when you've got a company as large as his is. But I think that's also what's kind of exciting about George, is that he doesn't think about that stuff. He thinks about, well, gee, what can I do now that would be groundbreaking, number one, and number two would be intellectually stimulating for the people that are watching the programs he's putting together. And I think that's kind of an interesting viewpoint on holding a company together. I think that's why Fox had such an issue with working with George in the first film. They constantly argued that he had no vision.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted something, but he didn't know how to get it. He wanted the Death Star to look a certain way, but how do we get the Death Star to look that way? So I just think that George doesn't have a really good fix on how to market himself in a way so that everybody understands what he's trying to do.
That's a good point. Did you have any other response to my point?
My only other response, I can see where people would say it seems like Lucas is only trying to make money. Mm-hmm. I actually can kind of understand that because, I mean, let's face it, that's what Lucasfilm Limited is all about. Because
sure.
They have to make enough money to stay above board, you know, to keep things going. I have just started to begin to realize what it is like for Star Wars fans who are, say, like collectors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been listening a lot to Star Wars Action News and some other podcasts like that for people who are collectors. I just started having my eyes open to all the stuff that's out there I didn't even, like, know about, you know, or just never paid attention to. I knew about, I hate to put this term out there, but, like, toys.
Mm-hmm.
But the memorabilia and the stuff that's out there is phenomenal. And I wonder sometimes, too, if Lucasfilm Limited is driving that a little bit. Because let's face it, every time they come out with a 12-inch action figure and they only make 5,000 of them,
mm-hmm.
and they sell them at Gentle Giant, mm-hmm. you know, at $50 a piece, and people are, you know, then going and eBaying them for, you know, $1,000 a piece,
mm-hmm.
well, they're making some, you know, serious dough doing this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I can see where people would say that maybe Lucasfilm's just after the money.
Mm-hmm.
I like to look on the other side of things and say to myself, they're just trying to survive.
Okay.
That they know that Star Wars is not going to necessarily last forever, especially if they do want to get away from doing movies. And they've got to have a solid platform before they go to, say, a TV show or something like that. And they've got to be able to sustain enough money to keep the company going if they're going to do something like a TV show. You know, a lot of people that I know of who are in the TV industry, you know, have explained to me that TV shows don't pay for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling commercial time and you are making some money in that regard. But honestly, TV shows end up in the red quite often. Because by the time they pay their actors and the production team and everything else, they're not making enough money to really survive.
True.
So I wonder if they're concerned, if Lucasfilm Limited is concerned about how little money they're actually going to make off the TV show. And they're gearing up for marketing. I'm wondering if that's their next step, really.
I wonder, too. Now, let's move on to your second point.
My second point, I think that Star Wars is still alive in the fact that we have created, as fans, as authors, as creators, a huge expanded universe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just starting to get into that myself, beginning to understand that it is bigger than me, bigger than I even thought it was. I thought I knew a lot about the expanded universe, and the more I've been reading the books and the comics and everything that's out there, the more I'm beginning to understand that it is just massive, massive, massive. And I think there's so much of an expanded universe in Star Wars that really there's no way for them to ever, quote-unquote, kill the expanded universe. There will always be an author out there who wants to write a Star Wars story.
Right.
There will always be a comic book creator that wants to create a comic book about it. I think that in that regard, Star Wars is just massive in the fact that there are so many creators out there that want to be involved in this storyline. And go beyond just the, you know, main characters. That's the one thing I'm really liking about some of the new concepts that are out there right now, like, you know, the live-action TV show. I really like the idea that they're not going to stick to, you know, Luke, Han, Leia, Darth Vader. They're going to go outside of the scope of that. I just
mm-hmm.
think that, in a way, the universe that was created for Star Wars is so massive that there's a lot of stories that could be told that would have no influence on the movies, per se, but would be very interesting outside of the scope of those movies. So just the fact that the extended universe, the expanded universe, is just huge and massive, mm-hmm. I just don't see that going away anytime soon. I think it would take decades for that to actually die out.
I agree with you, and I will save my comment toward the end. Okay? But I do agree. I think the books are a sleeping giant that no one really is aware of, because most people just think of the films. And I think the books, you know, and you mentioned, you know, the memorabilia and that kind of a thing. I think those are all kind of little pocket areas that no one really wants to think about. But I think if the books, and I've never read them, but if they're as well written as I've heard, and they affect the TV shows, then, you know, perhaps that could be a positive thing all the way around.
Yeah. Yeah, I've just started getting into the books. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've read it. I've, like, read spotty books here and there. Like, you know, I heard Aaron Alston's books were good, so I went and picked up a couple of them, read them, really liked them, enjoyed them. You know, I had a Michael Stackpole book. I lost interest about three chapters in. Mm-hmm. They described a dogfight, and I got really bored very quickly. Mm-hmm. James Luceno's books, I've read all of those, and there's not a James Luceno book I don't like so far. You know, every book that he's written in the Star Wars universe is, to me, incredible. Just a great writer, great person to be involved in the Star Wars universe, seems to understand it a lot. Another person I could put into that group, actually there's two more, I think Timothy Zahn, I know he gets a lot of criticism for his books, but I really think they're well written, if not anything else. And Karen Travis, I am blown away by Karen Travis. Mm. She does a phenomenal job, and I think she knows more about the Star Wars universe than you even get out of her books. I think, just has a lot of information on her, and you can get that point across in her books. And that's, I think, what is so cool about Star Wars, and the fact that there are so many authors right now that are really putting their neck on the line and creating these books. It would be so easy for them to become a writer for a different type of genre, like a Stephen King, like a Tom Clancy. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they chose to do Star Wars, I think, says a lot about the expanded universe.
Sure. I agree. Let me move on to my second point, and we'll just keep moving, is I think Star Wars is dead because of George Lucas's control. And we were just talking about the books right here. So I hope, I know that there is an approval phase that a writer has got to sit down with him and discuss, or at least a part of the company to discuss the scope of stories. I know that there were stories written before Episode 3 that they would not allow them to talk about Sith and different things like this. So, you know, you can write about this, but you can't write about this and all that. And his control is almost throughout. Now, there's one thing to have a vision, and there's another thing to just be so controlled. For instance, the whole Greedo shooting first. I know a lot of people are saying, Jeff, just give that up. But, I mean, that's one friggin' scene. One scene that was shot that way. And all of a sudden, he woke up one night, oh my gosh, Greedo shot first, and that's not the, you know, or whatever. Han shot Greedo, period. That's it. That was in the movie. And yet, you know, oh, now we don't want him to make, I mean, he was a rogue. Han Solo was a rogue. He shot first, that's it. And I just, that whole scene alone, it's been changed twice.
Right.
Why? I mean, it's amazing to me.
I have my own opinion about that. And I think a lot of people have always avoided the elephant in the room. And mm-hmm. that is the social commentary that he's trying to make. And I think I think Lucas felt the pressure from other groups. The fact that Han Solo shot first, you know, and the fact that he ended up being a rogue, I think people played that up to Lucas and said, well, maybe, and I heard rumors that they had talked about if they were going to re-release the DVDs in the special edition, mm-hmm. and Han Solo shot Greedo, that they were talking about making a PG-13 DVD release. And Lucas had been upset about that, and they said, well, the only way we can get that from being a PG-13 is if Greedo shoots first, then Han shoots in defense. So I and that's just a rumor. I don't know if that was true or not, but if it was, then he was kind of pressured into doing it. I I've said it on my show. Mm. I think Han should just shoot first.
Start. Right.
I agree with you on that point. I absolutely agree. I just think he's been under pressure from other groups. And that comes back to, and Nathan made this comment on Chrono Radio 28 that he's concerned. And I would almost want to tend to agree with him that George is listening to the fans almost too much. That he's so concerned now about what the fans think, that what happened to his work? What, you know, where did he create Star Wars? Where did he envision it? Mm-hmm. If it's not what he envisioned, then why would you do it?
Mm-hmm.
And in that regard, I would agree with you that he has listened to the fans way too much on way too many things. I think he needs to go back to what he knows, and that is doing the things the way George sees fit, not the way the fans see fit.
Well, I think in the prequel trilogy, I think we saw a lot of George. We saw a whole bunch of George. And I think that the yes people that surround him is that he's comfortable with that. I don't think he has anybody that really kind of throws something down and says, this dialogue is stilted. You need to loosen it up. Go watch Empire Strikes Back again, George. Loosen up the dialogue. Oh, no, no, it has to be this way. What do you mean it has to be this way? Well, this is what I... Okay, and I just... I mean, okay, these three actors were young upstart actors that had little or no experience. You know, the Han Solo, the Princess Leia, and the Luke Skywalker, their whole banter was just magical.
Mm-hmm.
And... I mean, Lucas was, behind the writing of that, and it didn't carry over. And so, I think as time went on, then people kind of backed off and said, "We'll just let George do it." And I think that was to his detriment. The episode one did fantastically, phenomenally well, and then it just kind of went down from there. The original trilogy films are just magical in my mind. And for him to say there's no 7, 8, 9, I think he's cutting off his own foot because there's nothing else to look forward to. And I agree with you about the books, but people look forward to movies. And it's something to look forward to. We had a good run between Return of the Jedi and then the years right before Episode 1. We had a good push. And I think that Comic-Con and that celebration was just phenomenal. Because people were getting into it, and we were coming in the digital age, and there were so many new things that we could see in a Star Wars universe. And now, no 7, 8, 9, that's a shame. There's so many great directors out there, and just because he had a fight with the DGA years ago, he needs to just pay those fines, get it taken care of, and get three directors that will just blow our socks off. If he doesn't want to direct, that's fine. He can executive produce, but let them do what they do. Let's get 7, 8, 9 out there. Why not? I think his control is too much. So,
I think what we're going to start seeing, and I'm speculating here too. Again, I think we're going to start seeing George actually backing off more.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're starting to walk into that era, and I think it's going to start happening with the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to see George back off a little bit, and I think more people are going to step up. I don't even want to say it's going to be Rick McCollum, but it will be people from lower in the industry that are going to step up and take over what George started. I don't think he can keep this up forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's talked about the stress. People have talked about the stress that he's been under trying to do all these things. I think at some point in time, George just won't be able to handle keeping it going. And let's face it, you do need fresh ideas, and you do need people to step in and do that.
Sure.
I'm not convinced that there won't be a 7, 8, and 9. Mm-hmm. I would actually speculate that somewhere along the line, and it won't be too long in the future, it might be 10 years from now, that somebody's going to take the Timothy Zahn series. I really do think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to say, all right, it's been enough time. Let's pull it out. Let's make a movie out of it.
Sure.
I think George was almost, in a way, smart to leave a gap between Return of the Jedi and The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost think that was calculated. Mm-hmm. I think it was done on purpose to let it die out for a little bit and see if the fans really want Episode 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
Well, we cried out for it, and it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, then we complained.
Right.
And now I think he's going to let it go for a little bit. You know, put a TV show out there, let it go a couple of seasons, if it's hugely popular, maybe it'll build back up to another film. I think he's kind of playing the field like George likes to do to see, all right, well, can we make this work?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, again, I'm speculating, but I would be willing to say that we might see a 7, 8, 9 in 10 years.
Okay. Let's move on to your third point.
Okay. Well, my last point about Star Wars, you know, not being dead, is actually, I mean, I think a lot of people are going to probably disagree with me, but I think that Star Wars is, in a way, kind of the king of science fiction. Star Trek had its years, and I'm not going to disagree. Star Trek was the king for a long time.
Right.
But I think that Star Wars has set itself so high and has put itself at such a level that there will never be a science fiction show or movie that could really ever quite top it. And I think what makes it absolutely unique is the fact that Star Wars is not based on anything else in regards to it was a free thought or an idea. I talked about this in one of my special editions. It seems like, and this is my biggest complaint of like the movie industry today, there has never been an original thought in a movie theater for a movie probably since the Star Trek Star Wars generation. You know, every movie that I've seen now is either a book that's successful, like Harry Potter, Chronicles of Narnia, Lord of the Rings, and I can say that because I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, or it's a remake of an old movie, you know, King Kong, stuff like that, where we're taking an old movie or an old TV show like Dukes of Hazzard. I can't believe they did that, and actually are running that into a movie, whereas Star Wars is original. It's a concept unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what makes it so unique and set so far above every other science fiction show that's ever existed and movies as have ever existed. Science fiction movies, a lot of them ended up tending to copy each other back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Right.
Star Wars kind of set itself apart from that in that it didn't copy the stereotypical science fiction film.
Right. I think probably the Matrix fans may have something to say to you. But
yeah, well, you know, I have my own viewpoint about okay. Matrix 2. See, I think The Matrix was a, you know, the whole series is an okay movie. I think the storyline was weak. The special effects were amazing to me. I thought they were incredible. I thought they took the Christianity part of The Matrix almost a little too far, like scary far. I got concerned about Star Wars when Anakin was supposedly born by midichlorians.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here we go back to the story of Christ and Anakin and everything else.
Right.
But the fact that Neo was almost like resurrected in The Matrix, that bothered me a little bit about The Matrix. Again, here we go, another not original thought. We're just taking Christianity and putting it into a new perspective. And that kind of scared me a little bit, the fact that The Matrix was so weak in the storyline that they had to go that far to try to prove that Neo was the one.
Mm. Well, okay. I think writers go with a deep theme, and I think that's what Lucas did. Although you're right, Lucas did not do outright Christian themes. He kind of melded things together, but you're right with the Immaculate Conception there and all that. I mean, that's they've said that other people groups have a similar story. But anyway, yes. Okay. My third point is Lucasfilm's slow reaction time. And I want to start off by saying weak TV shows. Now, I want to talk about a young Indiana Jones. Now, Lucas is a huge history buff, loves history, and that's fantastic. I am all for that. I think TV shows and films as didactic pieces are not used as much as they should be to reflect history and things that are important to know. I think a lot of them are fluff, but obviously he wanted to take young Indiana Jones and do kind of an action history lesson kind of a thing. Okay, that's fine. But TV, when they bought the show, they probably wanted the films, even though I read over and over Lucasfilm told them they're not the movies, they're TV shows, they're kind of little short little things and all this kind of stuff. But that kind of started that trend of less than. TV was less than. And Lucasfilm has been really slow to react. I was flabbergasted to hear, I think it was on Inland Empire Star Wars news site, and they interviewed Rick McCallum, and he said that they're still a year out from writing the TV show. I almost fainted. I mean, they couldn't write the show while they're doing the movie. They couldn't have writers that would come up with something. Battlestar Galactica just alone will bury it. I mean, Battlestar Galactica is such a fantastically written show. It has gone to the Lost kind of writing, and it's incredible. I mean, Star Trek, even some of the Star Trek ones, Stargate, these are all shows that are fantastic television shows. Lucasfilm is not prepared, they're not ready, and they've waited so long to do it. Now, the cartoons have been fine, but they're cartoons. I mean, that's what. But a live-action show with such a long time, and then after the films, I don't know. I have grave, grave reservations about this television show. This television show is just about the last major event that may save this franchise, unless they do 7, 8, 9. And that's where I'll let it sit. I don't have any faith in the TV show. Rick McCallum, every film, he said, oh, this is going to be fantastic. This is going to be fantastic. This is what the fans have been waiting for. I keep waiting for the film. And you know what? I think the film the fans were waiting for was Empire Strikes Back. I'm not going to wait anymore. And I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think so. Unless, as you said, and I hope that he relinquishes control and he lets just very, very creative people just run with it. Say, you guys know the story, do it. That anyway, I'm done with that.
Well, you know, I sit probably right in the middle as far as the TV show is concerned. Mm-hmm. And Robbie and I have, like, emailed back and forth about this and talked about it a little bit. I think there's huge potential with the TV show, and there's huge danger mm-hmm. in this TV show, too. My fear about the TV show actually has to do with Lucasfilm's history behind TV shows. And I'm not even talking about the Young Indiana Jones mm-hmm. one. Let's go back to the history of Star Wars live-action TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have talked about it on my podcast, the Ewok Adventures, mm-hmm. Caravan of Courage. Mm-hmm. They have not had a successful live-action Star Wars TV show, and I'm not even going to get into the holiday special.
Sure.
It's scary where they've gone on the TV side of things. And if that is their frame of reference for a TV show, then I think we have a lot to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
However, I actually see them taking a year to do this as a sign of courage.
Okay.
I'm thinking, and I'm hoping, this is me hoping and trying to be a positive Star Wars fan,
mm-hmm.
that they're taking their time because they want to do it right.
Okay.
They want to take their time, they want to double-check the scripts, make sure that maybe it's accurate and follows the continuity. I think that's a concern, too,
mm-hmm.
that they have writing the script out. I'm hoping, and I am a very hopeful fan,
mm-hmm.
that they're looking at it and saying, all right, we want this to be as good as it can get. Now, in the same regards, it really scares me when they sit down and say, well, we're going to make it for, you know, less than $1 million an episode. Oh,
right.
Whoa. You know, if you plan on doing this in digital and you really want to make this work less than $1 million an episode, you might be shooting high,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you might want to be... You might want to be pretty honest with some of the guys who might be producing it, and especially the companies that are going to back it, that it might end up costing more than $1 million. If you put yourself in that boat, man, you are going to stick yourself in the foot and
right.
have no way out. And that is another kind of scary concept. But I am hopeful that the reason they're taking their time is they're thinking through this, and they're trying to plan it out in a way that it will fit in with the continuity, and that fans will really want to see this.
Okay. I think we've kind of talked about the different parts as whether Star Wars is dead or alive. I think one of the last final sections I want to kind of spring to you is that I think the future of the Star Wars phenomenon is now in the fans' hands. What are the fans going to do with it? And I don't mean just another Star Wars fan film, another Star Wars fan audio thing. I mean, we have the tools now in our bedroom to make the most phenomenal film that you can make. And the story writing, there's some great writers out there. And so I say to the fans, what are you doing? I say to myself, what am I doing? If this is going to continue, why don't we take it back? Now, for sure, probably all of us will go to court if we come up with a Star Wars film. But if we can do a sci-fi film that can use themes and have great acting and have great effects and have a great story, there have been so many films that have been, you know, affected by Star Wars, like Stargate. I mean, that was one of them. Independence Day. They were okay films, but they weren't Star Wars films. And so, you know, I say to the fans, if you wanted to continue, why don't you do something? I mean, it's one thing to be a memorabilia collector. That's wonderful. It's another thing to be a book reader. That's fantastic. But, I mean, why don't we take the future and create it ourselves? Who says we can't? Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to Roni's Own Radio number 40. And as you are well aware, Mr. Bob Christman and I were discussing, is Star Wars dead? Now, I have edited for brevity, for time, and also for flow as well. Now, the comments that Bob Christman has made are Bob Christman's comments. So if there's any type of discussion or any type of disagreement or agreement, you can contact Mr. Christman. He posts on the GalacticSenate.com, the Star Wars fan audio section of the GalacticSenate.com message boards. And you can also find his show, The Jedi Council Speaks, at JediCouncil.blog.com. Well, before we go, I'm going to pull out a little crystal ball. Just kidding. We're going to look in the future of Roni's Own Radio, and I'm going to talk about a couple of shows that I'm putting the finishing touches on. And one is a show about the hit TV show Lost. Colleen and I love Lost, as do many, many people. What's interesting is, even with a hit show like that, there's still people that have never seen it. So, the next Roni's Own Radio is going to be called Finding God in Lost. Now, for those of you who don't really have a religious belief or are kind of turned off by that, let me just calm you down a little bit here. We're going to talk about themes of Lost as well. So we're going to kind of integrate religious themes as well as other themes. I think you'll find the show interesting, whatever you believe or if you don't believe. So please don't shy away from that just because of the title. I assure you, you will learn about Lost, and it will get you up to speed. I'm not going to promise that we won't spoil anybody or whatever, but you'll learn about Lost. I also had a blockbuster interview with a gentleman who's a friend of mine. His name is Chris Sonnenberg. He is an animator, a hand-drawn animator. He worked for Disney during the... After the peak of the Golden Age, he worked on Pocahontas all the way on every feature and short animated film that Disney Animation did until Home on the Range. He's got a lot of stories. He has a lot of things to say. And we're going to cut up his interview into four pieces, and I think three or four. Anyhow, we're going to do a multi-part discussion and interview with him about his past, how he got to where he knew he had a gift working at Disney, and then the aftermath. What's he doing now? It's a fantastic interview. There's just so many magical moments. We talk about the stories of the films that were released and how it changed, how actually films were actually done, and at least some pre-production work done, and then they were changed completely. It's a fascinating interview. He's a great guy. And at the end of that interview, I kind of promised him, or I begged him to come back. So great shows are coming. So please subscribe if you're not subscribed. And if you are subscribed and you enjoy the show, which I hope you do, please tell your friends. Please tell other people. We can always use more listeners to Roni's Own Radio. And if you know of other people that listen, ask them to subscribe too. And vote for us up Podcast Alley. Okay, enough of the selling. Thanks for listening to Roni's Own Radio. Please visit our website at jrdonline.com and send us some feedback at jeff.roni@gmail.com. And if you're using WinPotter to listen to this podcast, you can always use the feedback form to your left. Until next time, this is Jeff Roni saying, see you later. Bye. Roni's Own Radio is a Roni's Own audio production.